But first, be upstanding for Laura Tingle. Welcome back, Laura. I know you've been awfully busy. We briefly mentioned, but cautiously mentioned, the bubble issue last week. Is there anything we can add to that, being cautious?
We were being a bit cautious last week, Philip. Not quite so cautious now. And, of course, what we're talking about here is the Four Corners program about the rather toxic culture in Canberra. Look, there are lots of threads to that program, and, you know, you can only pull a few out of them at a time. But I think at its heart, it was about the way women still find themselves treated in politics. And that's everything from the fact that female politicians have suggestions of sexual misconduct used against them by their factional foes, to what happens to staff, and this was a particular focus of the program last week, female staff, the one particular case involving Michelle Miller, who was a staffer for Alan Tudge. They had a consensual affair. When the affair was over, she was moved to another office and eventually basically frozen out, restructured out of a job. And it's continued to have ramifications for her to this very day. Louise Milligan from Four Corners, who reported that story, reported today that Michelle Miller, who had turned up for a new job in Canberra with a defence industry organisation, only to be told that because of the controversy, she wasn't going to be hired after all. So it's about power imbalances. It's about the sort of culture in Canberra where blokes can basically do whatever they like and get away with it. And in an era of, you know, where foreign spies have become a real thing again, that's potentially an issue of compromise.
Now, I understand the PM was rather concerned with the term bonk ban.
Oh, Philip, that's terrible, don't say bonk ban. Well,
I'll wash my mouth out later, but he sent it to somewhat deflect questions.
Look, it was one of those moments that echoed around the world, Philip, which is one of those things where why do all the bad bits reflect around the world on us? But my excellent colleague Phil Khoury from the Financial Review asked Anne Rustin, who was appearing with him at a press conference, what she thought of how the sort of standing of women had improved since the introduction of the so-called bonk ban, which was the ban on sexual relationships between ministers and staff introduced by Malcolm Turnbull after the Barnaby Joyce affair. And the cameras swung to Anne Rustin and she started to answer, and then Scott Morrison cut her off. Now, the fact
well,
that he cut
well,
her off...
Well, heavens above, rightly so.
Right. So that was that the sort of the visuals of that rather captured people as a statement on women. But I thought the more significant point was that the Prime Minister, as he sometimes wanted to do, was quivering with outrage about people sort of dismissing this ban as in this flippant way as the bonk ban, which is a terrible way of describing it. But he, when he was pressed on whether there should be any action taken about the two ministers about whom the program was about, i.e. Alan Tudge and Christian Porter, he said, well, no, because Australians understand human frailty. And that's right too, isn't it, Philip?
So absolutely.
There you go.
I don't have any, but I understand that others do, yeah.
Yes, I'm sure. Well, I don't have any either, so you know, we can only look on and marvel.
Yeah, but it gives us objectivity, doesn't it? But didn't he effectively say it didn't happen on my watch, so, you know, move on, nothing to see here?
Well, which is what he does almost all the time. You know, it's the same as saying, oh, that's just inside the Canberra bubble, nobody cares. But he has this thing where he says, well, in this particular case, these were matters that were dealt with by the former Prime Minister, i.e. Malcolm Turnbull, so that they aren't something that I have to address. And he's implicitly saying that, as far as he knew, nobody was bonking anybody under his reign, so that was all fine. But it's not good enough, Philip, let's face it. I mean, you know, you either have standards or you don't have standards. And you know, what there are so many examples now. There are so many rampant examples now of ministers never being accountable for anything, including, for example, the fact that the government has now, you know, on the day of the trial, has basically rolled over and agreed to a package which in toto is worth $1.2 billion for the victims of the so-called robo-debt excellent idea of 2016, which was actually brought in under Treasurer Scott Morrison, which was supposed to raise money for the budget, and it's now costing all this money. There have been five ministers who've been involved in running this thing, including Alan Tudge and Christian Porter, Paul Fletcher, Stuart Robert, Scott Morrison's best mate, and Scott Morrison. But apparently nobody gets the chop for that. And meanwhile, poor old Christine Holgate at Australia Post goes down the Googler for a couple of Cartier watches.
I understand you spoke to the Shadow Minister for Government Services, the fondly remembered Bill Shorten, tonight.
Yeah.
He reckons Labor will continue to push for a royal commission into robo-debt. Does he have a snowball's?
Well, royal commissions, you know, they're sort of, They come and they go, don't they, where people decide that they're a good idea or not. I think both Labor and the Greens are pushing for a royal commission. I think that they've basically got a bit of a snowball's chance at the moment, Philip. But, you know, something may give at some point. If you think about the long drawn out history of the Banking Royal Commission, you know, the question is, what are sort of the dynamics that will keep this story going? Now that there's sort of satisfaction in a financial sense about this, it may be that, you know, there's no momentum to force the government to do something. But, you know, things take all sorts of strange turns these days.
Young William said the fact that no minister had resigned over robo-debt signals, and I quote, that ministerial responsibility in the Morrison government is dead. So let's just walk back to behaviour. At the weekend, you quoted the Ministerial Code of Conduct. Serving the Australian people as ministers and assistant ministers is an honour and comes with expectations to act at all times to the highest possible standards of probity. Talk about an ambit claim.
Well, a couple of things here, Philip. I actually got a couple of emails from people when I quoted the Ministerial Code of Conduct that you've just quoted, saying, oh, for goodness sake, Laura, though it might have been a bit more colourfully expressed than that, you know, what planet do you occupy that you actually think people will act to the highest standards of probability? I'll tell you what planet I occupy, Philip. One of them is the one that says that's what they should be doing. But two, guess who wrote the Ministerial Code of Conduct and whose name is on the current edition, and therefore, as far as I'm concerned, is its author, Scott Morrison. It's his code of conduct, as it was all the previous prime ministers. So, you know, it's either his standard of conduct or it's not. And I think we've just really sort of reached this tipping point where there are just so many egregious things where ministers aren't held to account for anything, no matter what they do, that it's going to just become an issue.
Okay, let's look at standards of conduct for shadow ministers. This should have been a great week for Labor, but of course we saw Joel Fitzgibbon taking his cricket bat.
We did, and this has been festering for a really long time. I don't know how it's going to be resolved. I mean, Joel Fitzgibbon, there's a couple of things about Joel Fitzgibbon. One of them is he's been around a really long time. He's always, you know, in the thick of the action about leadership moves and things like that. Often, you know, to his credit, I think he was like the last man standing defending Kevin Rudd at various points of time. But he had that absolutely savage swing against him at the last federal election.
Largely to One Nation. Yeah.
Exactly. And it was, I think it was 17% from memory. So he's incredibly safe. One of the safest Labor seats in the country is now very marginal. So he's sort of fighting for his political life apart from anything else. But it's basically this argument about, okay, is Labor a party of the blue-collar worker or not? We've got to protect the blue-collar workers. And the fighting ground about that is about coal and about how fast, once again, Australia cuts its emissions. Now, there have been a couple of interesting developments here.
Labor essentially went to the last election saying we have to cut our emissions by 40% by 2030. The government's position is that that emissions will fall by about 26 to 28% by 2030, because Shazam and technology or something. Angus Taylor, who's the energy minister, actually sort of admitted last week that to actually get to net zero emissions by 2050, which the government says is its more or less position, you'd actually have to have a 40% reduction in emissions by 2030. I hope that's not too many numbers. But anyway, but the big brawl is everybody, you know, across the union movement knows that these jobs are going, the coal jobs are going. It's only a matter of time. The world market is moving against them. The question is how fast those jobs go, and that's reflected in the debate about what the new figure will be for Labor's emissions target reduction by 2030.
And now, before I let you go, I've just been advised that the Prime Minister is going to Japan. Are the Olympic Games on again?
Look, have we got time for a very quick backstory on this?
Yes, Philip? Please.
Okay. So before Shinzo Abe had to leave office in a big hurry because he was very sick a few months ago, the plan had been that Scott Morrison was going to go up to Japan, as he is now doing, and that the Japanese and Australian governments would deliver a exceptionally pointed message to the Americans, whoever it was who was going to win, that really they had to, you know, focus their attention a little bit on the Pacific because hashtag China, as they say on social media. So it's interesting that this is now going ahead. There's going to be a lot of talk about defence, and it's one of the reasons, I think, why this really controversial report into what happened in Afghanistan with Australia's troops has been put off until Scott Morrison gets back from Japan, because it's not good to have bad stories about your defence forces when you're about to go to Japan to talk about greater defence cooperation.
Laura, a privilege and a pleasure as ever. Laura is, of course, 7:30's chief political correspondent, and this is Ellie Nell on Radio National.